Welcome to the AI and Faith podcast. We are a community of expert technologists, professionals, and faith leaders bringing the ancient wisdom of the world's major religions to the ethics of artificial intelligence. Join us on this new journey and welcome to the conversation.
In Islamic scholarly ethics, people will always end with the saying that God knows best. So after all of the knowledge and everything, we say that this is what we have, you know, eventually we submit to God and say that, the ultimate knowledge belongs with God. So that's how we humble ourselves. And we want to apply the same thing as we are training this chatbot.
Welcome. My name is Gilad Berenstein, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the AI and Faith podcast. On this podcast, we're bringing together experts from across our community and thought leaders from around the world, so that together we can learn the key lessons required to build a world where artificial intelligence benefits humanity and all of us individually. Today's episode of the podcast is a really special one, as it is my honor to interview and introduce to all of you a new partner of AI and Faith, Islamicity. As you will hear soon, Islamicity is a perfect partner for our journey to utilize ancient wisdom to build a world where AI benefits us all. So with all of that, let's get started. Thank you both for joining us today. It is so wonderful to have you here on the podcast. And to kick us off, I'm hoping you can please quickly introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about the organization.
Thank you, Gilad. My name is Muhammad Abdul Aleem. I'm a co-founder of Islamicity. My background is information technology, working in nuclear power, aerospace, and now for the last 30 years, working with Islamicity that we created with a group of people. We started Islamicity basically to as a digital house of wisdom, a digital house of knowledge, so that people will connect with our faith. We're passionate about what we do. We're passionate about building bridges of understanding, how to use technology, how to use knowledge, and building these bridges of understanding among people within the faith and between faiths also.
Beautiful. And Zaid?
Yeah, hey, I'm Zaid Simji. I am volunteering at Islamicity right now in sort of an AI advisory capacity. I've worked for several years after graduating at Amazon Web Services. We were building some of the initial data lake / advanced data warehouse technologies there. So my background is really sort of in big data, usability, that sort of thing. From there, I left Amazon and started doing a couple of startups, different ventures. My latest startup is called Guardrails AI. I'm the co-founder there, and I lead engineering there. And really what we're focused on building at that company is reliability within AI workflows so that people who are using AI applications can build things safely, as well as in a way that performs like they actually want it to perform. Hallucinations, et cetera, are becoming bigger problems as models get more sophisticated. And so we're there to guard against those and teach people how to work around those implications. Now, as far as Islamicity goes, I was brought in by Brother Aleem, who's also my uncle-in-law, my wife's uncle. He and my father-in-law, as well as a couple of other guys, co-founded Islamicity back before I knew how to use the internet. So I've been brought in to kind of advise on different AI initiatives. And the first one that we started with was one called Chat ILM, which is a play on words. ILM is it's not really an acronym, but when you read it out as Chat ILM, ILM is the Arabic word for knowledge or something to learn or a word. And we just thought it was cool interplay between that. And there was cool interplay between that and ChatGPT. So that's an Islamic-based chatbot to answer questions that Muslims might have. And it is targeted towards Muslims who are curious about their own faith and understanding questions, even though they might not have access to trusted, reputable sources of knowledge in their personal life.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This is a perfect introduction. And in addition to, of course, all the diversity within faith, within AI and faith, we love the ability to bring people from industry and from nonprofits and from other parts of life together as we all work to build an AI that's really beneficial for all of us. So thank you both for joining us. And before we jump into Chat ILM, which I'm very excited to talk about, maybe give us a little bit more big picture. What were some of the things that Islamicity did at the beginning? What are some of the key initiatives it focuses on today? And who are you most engaged with in your community?
When we started Islamicity in 95, we already had an Islamic bulletin board. This is way before your time, Gilad, where people yeah. had to dial in to computers via modem. And we called it an Islamic bulletin board. But when we saw the browser technology emerge in around 94, we jumped on that right away. We registered the name Islam.org, Allah.org, and all of these names, these digital real estate names that pertain to Islam, basically. And we saw it clear as daylight that this technology we can that combines text, audio, video in one medium is going to be a powerful way to communicate with people. So we jumped on that right away. We started Islamicity, and very quickly we became one of the most prominent websites on Islam at that time. And since then, we've been trying to see how do we actually connect people to our faith. Currently, there are scholars, of course, who understand our holy texts in a way that they can explain to people. But we want people to connect with that text on their own terms. So we've developed some very sophisticated Quran search applications, Hadith applications. Hadiths are sayings of the Prophet. There's a large volume of data, sayings of the Prophet. So how do we connect with that? How do we understand that? And Arabic, of course, is an important aspect of all of this. So we need to go back to the root of Arabic and understand words and see how we can apply those words in the context of the world that we understand today. So that has been our objective and mission since then. And of course, AI fits directly into this in terms of how do we make information, authentic information, reliable information accessible to all people, people within Islam who want to understand their faith better, and people from outside of Islam who want to see what is Islam about and understand the religion from an outside perspective. A large number of university professors have been using our website for research. And beyond that, just average people, we've been out there for a long time. Google searches will often show our data in on various topics. We have been doing this for the last 30 years, and we're continuing to evolve.
That's really incredible. And I love that focus on giving people access to knowledge. And specifically, one of the things you said that I didn't really think about, which of course resonates from a Jewish perspective as well, is these words are written so long ago that the meaning of some of these words have changed, the language has changed, and that's something that's easy to forget. And I love that this is one of the focuses that you guys have at the organization.
Very good. Yes, absolutely. So in Arabic, the three-letter Arabic root word, you know, can mean various things. So when we look at, of course, our belief is the Quran is the actual, in Arabic, is the literal word of God. We want to make sure that we can understand that from a perspective of how do we understand information today and how do we apply that today.
Zaid, I'd love to bring you back into the conversation here to talk a little bit more about ChatILM. So tell us a little bit, how did you create it and what was the original goal when you put it together?
The original goal was to give users a trusted source of information that they could literally just query and get back in very simple English. And this was one of the actual success criteria, was they could get back in very simple English what the answer would be based on, again, trusted sources. If you have a request that might not be a standard request, you know, it's Thursday afternoon and I'm feeling really warm, do I need to do so and so? You can get back a couple of sentences as an answer. And obviously that's evolved as we've seen real usage as well. People ask sometimes philosophical questions, sometimes linguistic questions, and these are all things that we want to solve. But really the heart of it was to give that kind of practical everyday advice.
I love that. And the whole idea of how do we connect our actual lives day to day to our faith and to our religion. And I want to hear more about how you built it. And the other thing I want to bring into it is AI bias. You know, we've talked about that a lot during the podcast. And I'm curious if you run into any AI bias and if you've noticed that maybe the AI bias treats different religions differently or has more information about some religions versus others, what you have seen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's talk about the AI bias a little first then, right? There's some burgeoning academic style research on this, but really like experientially, ChatGPT being the most popular sort of AI chat app actually addresses regular everyday questions sort of decently. You know, it'll get stuff pretty wrong sometimes. From an Islamic perspective, it'll get stuff pretty wrong sometimes. But I think the bigger deal is that like its sourcing is not very good compared to when you use ChatGPT for other religions. Now, I haven't done much ChatGPT work with other religions, but again, this is what I'm gathering through the research as well as through our personal experiences with ChatGPT directly. So it might give you the right answer sometimes, but it might be sourced incorrectly. And as you know, within religions, you have different sects, and you have within those sects, you have different like rulings and jurisprudence on specific topics. And if you want to go any deeper than sort of a yes-no answer, the sources become really important. And the kind of public chatbots don't bring those sources back in a way where, as a user, you can go in and like parse those and find deeper meaning like for yourself. There's also some bias around, of course, language, right? And we've actually experienced this building chat ILM ourselves, where when you build and test using primarily, you know, English, and your corpus of information is not primarily in English, right? Or it might be translations, English translations of traditional texts that were not in those root languages, you kind of get this compounding effect where you already have one layer of opportunity for error in translation, and then you have another layer for opportunity of error in summarizing those translations through the model. So that's kind of what we've seen as far as like bias goes. The way we use this in real life, building chat ILM, has really been to focus hard on the reasoning capabilities of AI. So as opposed to using AI to actually answer questions or be like super creative, which are other things that it's really good at, what we really wanted to do was build this sort of database of information that we trust. So Islamicity as a website has been around for a while, and it's collected a lot of information. It's collected rulings and different articles, copyright for like different books. And so this is all information that is highly trusted, and we're able to show to people and say like, look, this is where we get like good answers from. In addition to that, we have primary sources, Quran and Hadith. And so what we've really focused on doing is getting the AI to look at all of these sources and synthesize answers based only on these sources and try to ignore, to some degree, previous training it's had on these same sources.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of great stuff in there. And you did a beautiful job of bringing up what I think is the next conversation. I'm curious what both of you, how both of you think about this. And it was about localization. And you touched on the two topics I wanted to ask you about. First is language, because of course, there's Muslim people all over the world who speak all different languages. And the other is you talked about them as branches or sects within the faith that have different traditions and different rulings and things like that. So how do you guys think about that, both within the chatbot, but also as an organization more broadly? How do you think about bringing all the diversity within the world of Islam into these tools and offerings?
There's a maxim that I really adhere to these days, which is observe, learn, do not judge. So we want to apply that same, you know, when we're looking at these different sects within Islam, you know, where we can talk about different facts and present facts without passing any judgment. And that holds true for even between faiths and with other faiths. In Islamic scholarly ethics, people will always end with the saying that God knows best. So after all of the knowledge and everything, we say that this is what we have, you know, eventually we submit to God and say that, you know, well, you know, the ultimate knowledge belongs with God. So that's how we humble ourselves. And we want to apply the same thing as we are training this chatbot.
That's beautiful. And on the technical side, how do you think about that, Zaid?
It's a interesting and difficult question, but it goes back to kind of the core way we're building things around reasoning as opposed to around model-based summarization. The different sects, et cetera, all interpret through different ways the same sources. So, you know, these secondary sources I was talking about, they all rely, like in Islam, it's very important that they all have strong founding in Quran and Hadith. And of course, you bring in context after that. There are different sources for the different rulings, for the different sects, et cetera, within the faith. And we need to be inclusive of those. But it's actually a very difficult task. What we basically need to do is we need to make sure that we have enough information from all of these different resources, from resources of different sects, different faiths, et cetera, on the one hand. Then on the other hand, we need to make sure that as those resources reference the base Quran and Hadith, base primary sources that we have, they're in agreement and that the model isn't hallucinating, et cetera, and that the model is also showing sourcing correctly and is relying on the correct sources based on how people ask. You know, if someone says, I'm of sect A and I want to know this, right, we need to take them to the correct books that will give them those kind of rulings. Now, Islam has two primary sects, kind of the Sunni sect and the Shia sect. But within each of these sects, there are like subdivisions, of course. But across the sects, we all believe in the Quran. We all believe in the Hadith as a concept, at least. There might be some differences in what's acceptable as a Hadith versus what's not based on where you're at. But because we have that common understanding in Islam, as long as we're attributing things correctly, and as long as we're giving users the tools to both seek different sources as well as track the sources that we're actually using, users can make those like distinctions on their own, and they can dig deeper on their own if they so choose to. It's a balancing act between giving those tools and making it usable for like the average, you know, the average Muslim as well, right? You know, I would actually profile like the average Muslim sort of as a Sunni Muslim who doesn't actually have a strong resonance to their kind of subsect, but we'll actually take rulings from across the different sects within Sunni Islam. That's sort of how I think of it on the technical side. we haven't gotten to the level of sophistication where we've tackled all of these cases yet. That's definitely the direction we're trying to move into.
Yeah, this is incredible stuff because, of course, the same questions are being asked by different religions all over the world. I just can't help but see all the similarities to Judaism, where even within Orthodox Judaism, as you said, there's different sects within there following different rabbis and authorities who have different interpretations, different ways of even celebrating some of the holidays. And that brings me to another question or another topic I want to touch on. And how do you guys think about human agent escalation? Right. When someone is asking the AI a question about what to do in this scenario or that scenario, what in the pre-technology era, at least happened in Judaism, is someone said, go talk to your local rabbi and get him to give you an answer. Well, how do you think about that in the world of AI? When should it be bringing human into the loop? Is it topic-based? Is it depth-based? Is it based on something else? How do you think about it?
I actually have some interesting and pretty, I think, pretty biased thoughts on this. When I look through the questions, when I look through kind of like some of the data that we've seen, the way people are using Chat ILM, the majority of it is for sort of simple, everyday, day-to-day requests. Like there is room for different opinions, et cetera, but also fairly standard questions that you can answer like pretty well. So we're already eliminating maybe 70%+ of the cases. Like they just don't need human agent escalation because you're giving an answer that's like good enough.
Absolutely.
Now, if people want to split hairs over those, I make this assumption that the people that do want to split hair and go deeper for those, they'll typically have enough resources to go and do that kind of on their own, right? So, you know, if they have like a local cleric or something who they're interacting with and who's telling them in the first place that, hey, no, you like follow this way and not that way, that's totally fine. But like they have that resource that, you know, a lot of other people don't. And so that's not kind of like the target user in that instance. Now, in other cases, and this is, I think this is more advanced, but we have seen some of these, right? People asking sensitive questions, people asking questions about their health, people asking questions about their relationships. You know, we get questions about divorce and that kind of thing too. That's more difficult. I think from a rulings perspective, we can and should give good answers, but it is very important that we know to escalate when people are asking for personal advice, you know, for things that could cause harm in the here and now. The AI agent, while good at giving advice, the way we've built it and the way we've tested it is mainly for reasoning. So as we approach the limits of reasoning, right, we should try to escalate to, you know, go talk to someone. And I don't like thinking of it, even though we're an explicitly religious app, the humans we escalate to shouldn't always be religious figures, right? Like you need to escalate to clerics, escalate to counselors. Sometimes you might even need to tell people to, you know, like call 911 because like you're not in a good place right now, right? Fortunately, we haven't had any of those latter instances yet, but it's within the realm of possibility. And this is one of the difficult things with building AI chat-based systems in general is that your domain is the human language. Like the human language is infinite, essentially. So one of the things I've been trying to do internally is really define that circle within that infinite domain that we want to operate within, and then figure out how to escalate when we start leaving that circle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is so much important stuff you touched on in there, of course, in faith, but outside of faith as well. We talk about this all the time in business settings. When should you bring in a manager? When should you bring in a human associate instead of the AI making that decision? And this is often for trivial things like a refund of a product or something a lot less important than the questions we ask for faith. But the question about when we should bring AI and humans into it, I think is a really important question. Now, one more question in this kind of vein before we move on to a couple different topics. And Mohammed, I'm interested in your take on this as well. How do you think about persona models? How do you think about the ability to train an AI model on a given scholar or a given figure from religious past? Is that something that you would find appealing? Is that something you think that your audience would find appealing? Or is that in some ways uncomfortable?
No, I think it would be very appealing. You know, I'd love to see how I could engage with Rumi or Ibn Arabi or Al-Ghazali, right? So if you can train a model based on these personas with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
That this is AI, but at least get some sense of, you know, how they would be responding to this, I think would be very interesting. We have talked about that, and hopefully we can get into that. But instead of persona models, we are looking at some other applications. And I'll let Zaid touch on that in terms of how do we apply this in other functions of Islam, like we're talking about finance, Zaid.
Well, you are reading my mind because that's exactly what I want us to focus on next. So, and Zaid, we'll start with you. So where do you see AI deployed within Islam today, both within your organization, but then elsewhere? And then, of course, just as importantly, where do you think or hope we will see AI deployed over the coming years?
That's a great question. I am really gung-ho about a lot of these Copilot tools. When you code these days, and this is a relatively new development, right? While you're writing code, you have a little panel on the right side that gives you recommendations immediately on the next line that you need to write. So I've been thinking a lot about Copilots in terms of religious engagement. And if you think about the average flow for kind of religious knowledge workers, you can think of, you can think of these people as religious knowledge workers, you know, the guy that works in the office fielding questions, right? Or like people in Islam in America, at least, dawah is this idea of spreading knowledge about Islam to non-Muslims, right? And in America, it's taken on kind of two meanings. One is proselytizing, sure, but the other, and I think more common thing these days, is really just dispelling misinformation about Muslims, giving people a hotline to call into. A lot of time of these knowledge workers across the board goes into researching different sources where they know what the source is, but they might not just have it in front of them. So there, I think there's a ton of low-hanging fruit across all of these verticals for copilots that do research automatically, that pull in sources, et cetera. Might not necessarily do analysis, but it'll at least have, you know, those top 10 workflows that these guys do down pat, right? I think that that extends, by the way, beyond just Islam into all other religions. And I also think that this expands into, like, beyond, you know, religion into the world in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you already see copilots, Grammarly, like, you know, consumer level copilot just like take off. There are other things too, though. There are ways that AI is deployed kind of out in the real world that we don't see in religious communities, but we use every day in our personal lives. You know, like all of the search that we do online is sort of AI based. Islamicity too has some soft AI based stuff, but now with like AI summarization, you can get really precise answers even over current affairs, even over versioning topics, recently translated items, things of academic interest that make a lot of this knowledge really accessible to people. Again, at my day job, we have a bot on Slack where as soon as we paste in a link to an article, it summarizes the article and everyone in the company reads a 4-paragraph summary of this really academic dense paper. Imagine that kind of knowledge sharing, but at religious scales, right? Billions of people. So that's a little bit of where I think this is going. You know, more precisely within our organization, summarization is interesting. We really want to walk down advice a little more, though. I think that that's not fully explored. We mentioned financial advice for Muslims. It's a little bit different than it is for non-Muslims. We're not allowed to deal in interest. We have to pay almsgiving, you know, zakat, 2.5% of our total wealth every year. There are certain things we're not allowed to invest in based on, like, you know, ethical reasons. So we're trying to figure out what's a way to bring that kind of information and knowledge back in a way that doesn't like intimidate people. And now that we have AI, there might be personalized, simplified flows that we can work through that were too intimidating before to get into, right? Like, oh, like there's two common kind of experiences Muslims have with investing and with finance. One is, oh, you know what? We live in a context that's fundamentally sort of un-Islamic from a financial perspective, right? And so everything is fine. Like, go ahead, like, invest in whatever you want, kind of operate financially however you want. The other kind of common thing is we live in a fundamentally Islamic, un-Islamic financial context. So just don't participate. Don't invest. Don't do your 401k. And it's funny because they come from the same kind of root idea, yeah, but two completely opposite directions. And of course, you have a lot of people who are kind of in the middle and just don't want to engage with it from an Islamic perspective at all. I think it's just like, it's that fear of having to actually like reckon with your actual beliefs versus your material realities.
Yeah.
That I think having these personalized flows can actually bridge the gap like really well.
There's so much to talk about in there, but I think the idea of how do we help people live their faith and live their ethics throughout their whole lives, opposed to having these realms within they have different parts of themselves, I think is a really interesting use case in a place that I know all of us will be excited to benefit from your guys' knowledge and your guys' experience in. Now, we talked a little bit about in our prep call how religious communities are often behind the business community or the government or others in adoption of technology and often behind in their ability to finance access to that technology. So I'm curious if you've seen programs, you've worked with companies that are helpful on that front. Obviously, thinking about the financial advice bot they talked about a second ago, I think about, well, maybe that can help fund some of these things moving forward. But how do you think about that? How do you think about helping religious organizations and religious people kind of catch up or stay up to date on technology?
I'll give some really practical advice, like just on the ground technical advice. And then I think I'll pass it off to you guys. My main stuff there is go look for nonprofit grants from these companies themselves. If you're running one of these. Now that AWS, like Amazon Web Services, Google, a couple of these other, you know, big cloud providers, they host AI models directly. So with a little bit of work, if you can apply for their nonprofit grants, and they all have like these nonprofit solutions, right? It's a quick way to get started and at least do some exploration and technical investment without having to necessarily put up some monetary investment. You can also try out different models. You can also try out self-hosting on your own like laptop. Now there are a lot of small models that will at least get you kind of decently to where you're confident in the direction that you're moving. But yeah, fundamentally, I think go try and chase grants from the cloud providers.
Yes, Mohammed, I'm curious about your take. Is it important for religious communities to be on the cutting edge of technology, or is that not something that's fundamentally important on its own?
No, I absolutely believe we need to be on the cutting edge of technology, using these tools, adopting these tools, and making sure that they are done in an ethical way. If we don't understand these tools, then we are relegating that authority to someone else. That has always been our approach, that we need to adopt these technologies and make sure that we use it for purposes that we think are important in a way that will benefit people. I think businesses, for their own bottom line, should be looking at it in this way also, in terms of creating a better society for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And this really goes, I think, for me, to the core of why AI and faith exists and why I chose to be involved in this organization. And the idea that if we want to build a world that is inclusive of all of us, that is beneficial for all of us, then we all have to be engaged in the conversation. And we can't trust that someone else will do it for us. Which is why when I give speeches, both in the business context and in the context of AI and faith, I thank the audiences for engaging in these conversations. So I would say it's easier not to have these conversations. But if we don't, we're not going to build a world that we're all happy with. And that's informed by all this ancient wisdom that we bring from our faith and from the past. I love what you said there.
Absolutely. And that is really why we joined AI and faith also. It is an incredible effort that you all are putting together, and we are part of it now. But I think it also plays a role in bringing us together collectively as seekers of knowledge, seekers of God. You know,
absolutely.
Instead of labeling ourselves as Muslims, Jews, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, and so on, here we are as part of AI and faith, trying to look at our traditions. And how do we bring out those traditions? And I'm very hopeful that, you know, through these efforts, we will create a better understanding among all people, which is much needed these days.
Absolutely. I certainly could not agree more with all of that. And I want to finish by asking both of you one last question, which is really on the same vein, which is responsibility. How do we think about using technology responsibly? How do we think about balancing the things that make our faith so wonderful and special? And some of those things are the fact that they're not on the computer, that they're not somewhere else, that they're in physical space between humans. So how do we think about responsibility on both sides of that question?
From my perspective, responsibility is always there. That responsibility comes from our belief in God. If we are sincere in that belief, you know, we have to make sure that we're responsible with that knowledge that God has given us also. The more tricky part is that responsibility now lies with all of these big corporations. How do we make sure that we can influence the people who control some of these technologies to support this technology in a responsible way also?
Yeah. And I'd say part of the answer is them spending time with people like yourself, getting access to people who have knowledge and insights from other parts of life.
Is spending time with AI and faith.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Zaid, how do you think about responsibility?
I think there are a couple of guiding lights I have. One is that not everyone has in-person communities, of course, and the internet is like one of the best accessibility technologies. I extend that sort of thinking to this as well. I've said before, like during this conversation, that there are people who don't have people to answer like these independent questions. Of course, there's a ton of responsibility that comes with that. You know, one wrong answer, if it's wrong enough, outweighs 9 correct answers. So we need to make sure that we're doing really well there. Another guiding light is sort of, again, sourcing, right? Making sure that we're giving answers to questions. We're not giving advice that we can't like stand behind. And we're telling people where to go to look for the real answers. You know, part of, at least in our tradition, right, part of giving answers is not just giving, you know, telling people what to do, but it's telling people go look, you know. And so we need to fundamentally do that as well. I think if we can follow sort of like simple guidelines and, you know, keep in mind that really we're trying to bring people closer to their faith, closer to God, I think we'll be okay in the religious context. I think that there's, you know, it's hard for me to not go into the technical aspects of it because there are a million things to watch out for on that site, right? But those million things also shouldn't let us be afraid to explore, shouldn't also let us be afraid to try. And like was mentioned, if we don't do it, someone's going to do it for us. And those people might not have the same concerns that we have. Those people aren't going to be as careful as we are. Those people won't have these same guiding lights that we have.
That is the absolute perfect way to finish that thought.
You know, I had a conversation with an imam, and I showed him what we're doing with ChatILM, and he said that you're trying to replace us. And that is the furthest thing that we want to do, right? We want to enhance our collective information and knowledge so that the scholars and people who have access to the knowledge, you know, can work at a much higher level so that when we ask questions, the questions will be more relevant and they can answer the questions in a much better way. Because if we don't have the right knowledge, we're not asking the right question either. So my answer to him was that, look, we're only going to make your job more difficult because people will be asking you more difficult questions.
Absolutely. I love that. The future that I'm excited about is a future where AI and technology elevates us.
Yes.
And makes us more humans and gives us more opportunity to connect with each other rather than replacing us. So I think that is the perfect answer. Now, this conversation has been truly exceptional, and I think it is evident why you guys are such perfect partners for AI and faith. Before I let you go, I do have three lightning round questions. You're going to have 10 seconds apiece to answer them. We're going to go with Mohammed first and then with Zaid. What is one of your personal favorite use cases for artificial intelligence?
Accessing the Quran, that I have everything at my fingertips that I need to do to understand the Quran.
Amazing. And Zaid?
Well, for me, number one, ChatILM. I have to say it. I'm contractually obligated at the moment. But number two, Claude Code. Like, come on, running tests directly from command line. Technical answer, I know, but yes.
That is awesome. Okay, next up. What are not enough people talking about in the world of artificial intelligence? What are we forgetting to talk about?
How will we actually evolve with all of this knowledge? You know, and also, I think we need to reflect on that. You know, so some people are presenting a doomsday scenario, and some people are suggesting, as you said earlier, you know, we all want to enhance ourselves. So I think there needs to be more conversation around that and make sure that we have this technology and we understand this technology for our benefit. And all of these AI companies, they need to involve more communities like AI and faith so that we are using this technology in an ethical way.
Absolutely. And Zaid?
How to share the spoils. It's a shift under our entire, not just personal lives, not just religious systems to some degree, but fundamentally economic systems, which is why, you know, we have billions and billions of dollars pouring into these, and we need to figure out how to properly share the spoils of that.
I completely agree. It's somehow a conversation that's sorely lacking in Silicon Valley. And last question, Mohammed, would you want access to an AI faith leader?
No.
And you, Zaid?
I'm not sure what an AI faith leader is. If it's a persona model who leads us, I would also say no.
For the record, I would also say no. Thank you guys so much for joining this conversation. It truly was exceptional. And of course, I want to thank all of you, our listeners, for engaging with these important topics and conversations. And we can't wait to have you join us next time.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Stay tuned to listen to more recordings and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on our social media as well. We're on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us today.